Welcome to the World of a Research Assistant podcast. This collaborative discussion was inspired by the Institute for Scholarship of Teaching and Learning, or SOTL for short, and their new academic journal, Imagining SOTL. There was a call for submissions based on reflections from the Mount Royal University SOTL Symposium Conference that has been hosted in Banff, Alberta for the last 10 years. But first, I would like to acknowledge that Mount Royal University is located in the traditional territories of the Niitsitapi and the people of Treaty 7, which includes the Siksika, the Piikani, the Kainai, the Tsuut'ina, and the Eskia Nakoda. We are situated on land where the Bow River meets the Elbow River, and that the traditional Blackfoot name of this place is Mokinstis, which we now call the City of Calgary. The City of Calgary is also home to the Métis Nation. So, we were asked to revisit past work presented at the symposium and reflect on new directions of our research. So, since me and my faculty team presented on a Students as Partners framework in 2019, we wanted to continue that discussion. But this time, we wanted to dive deeper and explore the world of an undergrad research assistant and those aspiring to be one. So all in all, today's podcast theme revolves around inclusion. Who's at the table in this research world and who gets invited? So before I introduce the guests here with me, I'll introduce myself and my role as a research assistant. So hello, my name is Michaela Kronick. I just finished my fourth year at Mount Royal University in the Bachelor of Child Studies, and I'm an RA, but I kind of consider myself more as a partner in my research team, and I help carry out academic research for best practices in designing and delivering international field schools, and I joined Professor Sally Haney and Yasmin Dean as a co-researcher in their funded India Field School project. Okay, Corey, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Corey McAdam. I'm a second year Bachelor's of Child Studies student. I am working as an RA alongside Yasmin Dean and Christina Tortorelli. We're working on the differences between international students in practicum and how they're opportunities are different than domestic students.
Great, thank you. Daniel, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, my name's Daniel Major. I'm a recent graduate of the Cell Molecular Biology major with a minor in mathematics, in the Bachelor of Science. And I've been quite extensively involved in research, whether it be through independent projects that are course-based. I'm a paid research assistant with two different professors in the Faculty of Science and Technology right now. And I also participated last year with the Changemaker Studio, the Institute of Community Prosperity, as a Catamount Fellow, which uses systems-level thinking to help solve problems, use social innovation to think about and help solve complex problems.
Great, thank you. Zane, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Zane Muhammad. I'm currently in my third year of child studies, and I'm doing a major in child and youth care. And I am working with Aruba at the TRICO Changemaker Studio as a student changemaker co-lead. So we're just wrapping up the end of our term, but we've gotten to do a lot of advocacy and a lot of cool events over the past semester that focus on change making and advocacy and creating connection throughout MRU.
Wonderful. All right. What about you, Aruba?
Hi, my name is Aruba Siddiqui. I'm a third year child and youth care counseling student. I'm the co-lead with Zane. We are a student change maker and our co-leads with the Changemaker studio.
Awesome. And then last but not least, what about you, Nicole?
Hi, my name is Nicole Talby. I'm a recent graduate of Mount Royal University Bachelor of Nursing program. So I'm currently working as a registered nurse in an emergency department in Calgary. But as my time as a student at Mount Royal, I worked with the advanced critical care nursing team alongside Heather McClellan and Trisha Bray, and worked as a paid research assistant looking at barriers to student success in high acuity clinical areas. And then transitioned into a student researcher. And right now we're just working on getting that paper published. We also had the opportunity to present at SOTL alongside Michaela and her team.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for the intros, everybody. So to start off this podcast, I wanted to comment on the name of students as partners as a whole. And I found some literature that talks about the whole idea behind the name and how it's almost contradictory in a way. It doesn't quite communicate that students are always equal partners. And just quickly, for the sake of good practice, I'm going to name all of the authors in this 2018 editorial, which is Cook, Sather, Matthews, Natem, and Leithwick. And basically, they talk about how there's such a power dynamic to faculty student research teams and how the student voice isn't always heard in academic papers or projects. And so I just wanted to ask you guys is, do you have any experience with, quote, like power hierarchies in faculty student projects?
In the research that we've done so far and like collaboration, I feel like I am always like, my opinion is at least asked for. Sometimes it's being used and sometimes it's not. So I feel like in my situation, I would say that there is not like a power hierarchy. Mm. It's more of like, I would say that we're like collaborating together. Mm. And I would say that our role within Mount Royal is like kind of gone at that point. Like it's not, mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's seen as I'm a student and there's someone else. I feel like we're a team. We're all trying to accomplish the same thing in the end. And that's how it's like seen.
Yeah, that's really nice. I agree with you, Corey. I feel like in my personal situation, it's very similar. The faculty I'm privileged to work with, they definitely make me feel like I'm an equal employee in the project that we're working on. But I do remember thinking about in the past when I first started, like there was always some kind of tensions because I knew my faculty, they were my professors and one of them's the chair of my program. And so I always in the back of my head, I never wanted to let them down. So I always felt like I had to say yes to everything they asked of me or make sure I'm doing the best work I can because I didn't want to disappoint someone who's like, quote, higher up than me. Do any of you guys share that experience with your roles?
I kind of felt the opposite. Sorry. I feel like I was kind of fortunate because advanced critical care nursing is kind of a subset of nursing. It's like a kind of a graduate diploma. So it wasn't that the researchers I was with had any influence on my program. And so I felt like our relationship was completely collaborative. At first, I was just a research assistant and my job was just to transcribe. But as we moved through it, they were completely supportive. They really wanted my ideas. I was a big part in coding of the research. And then they gave me the opportunity to be published. So I felt like I've been completely supported in that, thankfully. But my relationship was a bit different with my faculty.
Mm. Yeah, that's great, Nicole. This makes me think of another question for the group. And I'm curious what you guys think. What qualities do you think help professors in their interactions with students, either in research positions or maybe just in the regular classroom, in your courses, in your classes? What characteristics?
Well, I think you can answer this question and also try and answer the last question you were talking about, Michaela, which talks about, you know, students as partners. And I can reflect on projects that I've been a part of where you as a student have the agency to, and it's tough with undergraduate research, right? Because we're semester based. So unless you have a project, I mean, there's one project I've been a part of, for example, that started the summer before the academic year happened, and then took place over two semesters. And then there was an opportunity for paid research at the end going into the following summer. But this can be really dependent on the funding of your principal investigator. So it can, of your supervisor. So it can be really tough, depending on their funding situation, depending on the amount of time that you have. I think that's a factor that we have to consider when we talk about how much agency does an undergraduate student actually have in a research project. Is over the course of a semester, if it's kind of an independent project, you basically have to hit the ground running in order to get something meaningful done and presented to the faculty. I think it can be a real challenge to then give students some sort of leverage or agency over an autonomy over the project. Now, that being said, it's certainly possible, and I think the qualities that a professor has to enable this is preparedness, thoughtfulness, a desire to excellence in teaching, excellence in scholarship. These are the kind of qualities that can allow a professor to achieve their own research goals and at the same time provide a really meaningful and engaging experience for undergrads.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Daniel. I'm actually going to pivot a little bit because you reminded me of something. I found a 2012 study by Zakaria and Ball, and they had a study where they looked at student perceptions with their professors and their leadership styles, and they found that RAs typically perceived older professors as more passive and avoidant leaders compared to younger professors or faculty. And in their findings, they kind of found like they wondered if age was a huge factor. Older profs are typically, they're more concerned about retirement or not always as energetic and excited with their students. But that was just one finding. And I thought that was really interesting. I almost wonder if that's a factor that plays into that. But what I'm hearing is that it's definitely context dependent, and it depends on every person involved, student and prof. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
I had some senior, I'm not going to say senior, but my research assistants were definitely veteran emergent ICU nurses. I'll speak to that. And I found them completely willing to mentor. They had so much experience and valuable knowledge to give. And they were kind of reaching the end of their careers, but that meant they had more time to kind of nurture my studies and really get involved with me. So I found the opposite of that study. I found them completely like willing to engage with me and teach me a lot because they had so much knowledge to give.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I would actually have to agree with Nicole because kind of related to your guys' research projects, me and Zane are also doing a self-initiated practicum for the spring for our third semester. And we have our supervisor we chose as a professor. She told us recently that she's going to retire this year, actually. I just found like she already in class, she was already like more than willing to like mentor, give us feedback. But now even more so, she's like, I have all these resources. So it's kind of just like she's willing to like give it her all. And just like to answer your question as well, like the qualities that the professors need, I would definitely say that they need to be understanding and flexible, especially with these online environments and like these packed timeframes that we have where people are expecting us to give out years and years of research in a semester, which is kind of nuts, but it can be doable. So I would definitely agree with Nicole in terms of older professors.
Yeah, very interesting.
My experience with this is the project we're working on now kind of went the opposite way that we thought. Mm. We had some issues with participation. So we've had discussions that's more like, I want to do this, but I need to make sure the rest of my team wants to do this. So it's more of a, who's willing to continue to do this? Because even though it went not as planned, can we continue to do this? So I feel like qualities is also like willingness and like the flexibility part is like key, because it's research, it could go smoothly, but we also like need people to be willing to be research subjects kind of. Mm-hmm. So I think like it's like a professor's willingness to study and like their interest in finding what you're researching is just as important as everything else, because if they're not going to be as willing if they're not as interested. So I think that that's also like a big part of like involvement with like faculty and students.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Corey. Speaking of characteristics, I wanted to talk about this topic with you guys. I couldn't help but notice most of us here today are females and identify as women, and I thought that was an interesting pattern. So I wanted to ask you guys, why do you think that is in this role that we're in? I guess before I ask that, I found some research kind of talking about this interesting pattern. And I found a really good research study by Kim and Sachs from 2009, and they used data from a student experience survey looking at kind of demographic areas with students in research, so gender, race, socioeconomic status, things like that. And in their study, they found that in research roles, males typically gained better political engagement, social activism, and more external benefits, while females were typically more internal, and they gained a better sense of physical, emotional, and academic well-being through these types of experiences with their professors, and that they kind of had a higher perception of belonging in the research world. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you share this sense of belonging in the role that you're in?
Mikaela, could you repeat, sorry to interrupt, saying, could you repeat the two characteristics for the males and females?
Yeah, for sure.
In what I was reading in this study, they found that males gained a sense of better engagement with other peers after doing a research project and being more social activists and kind of, you know, external stuff, while the females typically valued their research position because they felt like they belonged in a community and they appreciated the relationship from their professor or their faculty.
Do you know what kind of research this was?
From the study, it was out of California, and I think it was like a liberal arts school similar to Mount Royal. So I think it was very broad. I think they like surveyed thousands of students. So it was a variety of different projects and different stuff that students were involved in. So I'm not quite sure, but that would be interesting to know.
Thanks. Go ahead, Zane.
No, I was just going to say, I'm not in a research role right now. That's not what we're doing, but we do have a lot of the whole Trico Changemaker Studio is filled with women. I don't think that there is a male role in there. Yeah. So I can definitely see what it means by like community oriented. Like it's filled with women and it's so community oriented, and you don't even have to like work there to feel like you belong there. Like it's very like you just go there and you just feel like immediately accepted. So I definitely agree with the whole like I'm not saying that like males can't, because I don't know, like I've never really worked in an all male environment or anything like that, but working with like all females, like it's very community oriented and it's very easy to like feel like you're belonging in there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask you, Zane and Aruba, what the gender pattern was in your guys' roles. So that's very interesting.
So I don't know if I can relate to the study you mentioned, Michaela, but there is for sure a pattern. In my empirical anecdotal experience, right? That so we're an undergraduate university.
Yeah.
And there's definitely this pattern of that I've noticed, you know, women and female identifying people in change making roles that, you know, Aruba and Zane are in and a part of that. So the two areas that I've been involved, the social innovation side of student co-curricular experience. I was the only male identifying person in the 2020-2021 cohort.
Interesting.
For the Catamount Fellowship. So and then on top of that, just from what I sort of observed, I don't have the numbers. I'd be really curious to see, you know, let's look at something like how many presentations were delivered by to a department, for example, or on the Faculty of Science and Technology Research Day, or how many students, you know, what gender of students are participating in independent projects or something like that. And my suspicion, my hypothesis right now is that females are the majority.
By far.
I would go as far as to say by far they are the majority. So I wonder what's going on there. And I don't know. I don't want to hypothesize beyond that, but that's been my observation. And not to comment on anything qualitative about that, but that's definitely been my observation.
Yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. That's anecdotally, that's my experience too in my current role and with the India Field School and the team I work with. It's mostly women, and me and my co-workers/faculty members have talked about that a lot. Like, why is it that, you know, women seem to be drawn to this type of work or this type of community involvement? And obviously we don't really have the answer, and it's probably very context dependent, but it's interesting to hear that some of you guys have the same experience. Did anyone else want to comment on that kind of gender pattern in your role?
I feel like there's five of us here that are currently going to school for degrees that are definitely female oriented. So I like, my question would be, is, are there as many opportunities offered in more male driven majors or studies? Because maybe it is female oriented in, because of like, not the opportunities, but the like amount of females that are like enrolled. Because I don't know, I work in a team of all females. So I agree. Like, I feel like I could just walk in, ask any of them a question, and it's never like frowned upon. And I feel like it is like a community rather than like, oh, I have to go talk to like someone about this. It's more of a like casual conversation, I would say. So the like comfort level is like better. So I don't know, that was my curiosity, is if the opportunities were in like more female oriented majors. And
yeah that's an interesting observation, Corey.
I agree with Corey. Like, my program is primarily female. There's a handful of males, and I don't think any of them that I knew were involved in research, but in general in my program, there was probably a handful of people in my year involved in research. So I think the ratio of male to female is kind of demonstrated in research in our program, but it's based on the ratio of people enrolled in the program.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks for sharing, Nicole. Yeah, that's very interesting. I think on the gender pattern, there's definitely a mix of elements in there, whether it's a sense of community, like Corey mentioned, or wanting to have that experience on your resume and get those external, you know, higher achievement education benefits, like Nicole mentioned. So it's very interesting. On another note, with patterns, with demographics of people in this research world, I was also curious about race and identity and ethnicity involved in all of this. And so I did a little bit of reading on that as well, and with the same study by Kim and Sachs. And their findings on race with their study was kind of interesting. They found that white students, so of students who were in a research role or in some type of interaction with their professors, whether it was for course credit or for pay, whatever it was, of those students, they found white students, after that experience, they typically had a high educational goal and they were more motivated to get another degree, but not so much for others. And then for Asian students, they were more likely to assist faculty with research, but they were less likely from other groups to communicate and interact with their professors in class and engage in more communication. And the other interesting thing I took away from the study was that they found Black students were the opposite. They were more likely to frequently talk and communicate and email with their professors, but they had the lowest frequency of actually being chosen to assist their prof in a research project or an extracurricular thing. So I found the findings from that study very interesting, and I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on it, or any personal experience with racial bias or invitation, anything to do with that topic.
We can start us off. I think it's a really interesting set of observations you've told us. I think it's an important thing for both research assistant supervisors to think about, and not only as individuals, but as a system, as an institution. We have, I think, a bit of a crisis in the way that we think about race. It's an important part of people's identity, and it intersects with other things. We've talked about gender, but it's important to, I think, to identify and try at least to collect some data or to measure who is participating. And we just don't do that at all. It seems to me that, you know, the system of participating in research at our institution is very much almost colloquial, like you have a conversation with a professor, you find out that this other professor is doing some research, you set up a meeting, maybe you go to a department presentation, but nothing, but it's kind of, it's kind of all codified, and it's very almost discreet. And it's a who do you know type of situation, I think. And I feel, and I don't think there's any mechanisms in place to encourage underrepresented people or groups in research projects. I don't think we have. I can't actually tell you one research project at the Faculty of Science and Technology that's looking at this directly. But you know, for an institution that really focuses on teaching excellence, I think considering who's participating, not only who's participating, but who has the opportunity to generate participation. And we simply don't have the data right now to be able to say, or to be able to make, to be able to generate hypotheses, to be able to go into any more depth, because we're not measuring it. And that's got to be the first step.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Daniel. And actually, you reminded me of something from the very first authors I talked about. They bring up this term called radical inclusion, and how with the students as partners model, that's part of it. How do we make sure we're extremely advocating for certain groups of people? How do we, you know, open the door so that all types of students are invited to these opportunities? But yeah, I agree. In my experience, there isn't a ton of thought put into how do we specifically measure these types of students and how do we actively search for these students and welcome them. Like, it's kind of a weird, I think, topic that's not always thought about with professors. That's, you know, I think sometimes that they'll typically just think about the students who have the highest GPA, or like you mentioned, Daniel, networking. It's just all about who you communicate with and who you know and how you land the position. I think equity seeking groups, that's not always the focus. It's, I think by default, there's some, most professors are focused on, I want the student who participates in class and has the highest GPA and who's, you know, well-established in their networking. And I feel like students who happen to be outside of that might struggle finding their way into these opportunities if they want to be a leader and they want to be a change maker and they want to be in the research world. What do you guys think about that?
So I got into my research position. I just emailed Yasmin and I said that I was interested in it because I knew that she was doing research with Michaela. And then I got a response back that this professor was looking for someone and that we would have a meeting that day. And she called it an interview, but I feel like it was more of just a conversation. And then that day I found out I got the position. So for me, it was kind of just, I don't know if there was like some background, like, or meaning behind their madness, but it kind of just seemed like I emailed someone at the right time and got the position. They are faculty members, and so they could look at my grades and things, but it was never a conversation of, oh, are you doing well in your schooling? Are you doing this? It was just, are you free? Are you interested in helping? And their first question was, we need to make sure there wasn't a conflict of interest. So if I was in the program that we were studying at the time, I couldn't like join their team, which makes a lot of sense. But it was interesting because I was actually in Chris's class, like doing a credit course. So I was very concerned that that was going to be the reason why I couldn't be involved. But it ended up being okay because it was coming to the end and everything. But I feel like for me, it was just, I was in the right place at the right time. And it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of like interviewing processes or anything. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Corey.
Yeah. Kind of going off of what Corey and Daniel said, I think it definitely depends on who you know and what it's about. For me specifically in classes, like I'm very clearly Muslim. And so I remember kind of like trying to find ways to relate to what professors were teaching me in terms of like what I could do in the field to like gain like a therapeutic relationship with clients, stuff like that. Like I remember one time we had a presentation about how to keep yourself safe. So they were telling things like, oh, like make sure you keep your hair up, make sure you like if it's like really hot out or something, like wear like less clothing, just like stuff like that. And so I went up to the professor afterwards and I was like, hey, like I wear a hijab, like how do you think I should kind of go about that in terms of keeping myself safe? And the professor was like, I actually have no idea. And I was like, well, that kind of sucks because like I want to go into this field, like how do you, like I need to have more resources and things like that. So I think even just like the position that me and Zane are in right now, it was definitely like So Zane found it, and then we were able to be like, this is our experience in like classes, like this is who we know kind of thing. So it was more about networking, but they were never really brought up in class. They were never really brought up on like bulletin boards. It was kind of just like a off chance kind of thing. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Aruba.
If I could just highlight something Aruba has brought up. You know, when we talk about equity, diversity, inclusion, you hear this a lot, right? The EDI acronym. And it's so important, the diversity, in that you can't just have equity inclusion, but then all the people who get grants for research be older white males. Because the very problems that Aruba mentioned, and it's analogous to the problem of research that isn't even considered, problems that will never be addressed, and items that aren't brought to the table because the perspectives are just lacking, and the people with the power, autonomy, resources to think about these problems, to act creatively, and to facilitate change, they aren't present and enabled. So I think it's an excellent point, and thank you for sharing that example.
My experience, sorry, Michaela. I found that it was definitely networking related. I find that it's usually the most driven students that kind of want something other than just their degree, or looking for maybe advanced schooling afterwards or med school or something like that, that are driven to seek these research opportunities. And it's often hard to come by. I found in my experience, there's a handful of students that got the opportunity to do research. And for the most part, they were all female, and most of them were white females, which is kind of interesting in that perspective. And then I also found moving forward, networking was even more important, because once that research was done, for me applying for my master's, I needed academic references. And so let's say I didn't do research in my undergrad, that was a huge barrier for me getting into my master's. And I wanted to do thesis, and I'm in thesis, but if I chose to do course-based, if you didn't have research, you don't have any references to go off. And so my references were my profs, because I was super engaged in class, and then my principal researcher. And that's how I got into my master's, was because I happened to network in my undergrad and then networked my way through my undergrad in order to have these resources to get into my master's. And so I feel like it's definitely kind of, you get the opportunity in your undergrad, and that can perpetuate your future career. And if you so happen to not have that, it kind of stunts where you can go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for sharing all your experiences and reflections. Yeah, it's very interesting to uncover how all these different elements overlap, our identities and how motivated you are as a student, and the opportunities there, and the context of the professors who hold the power of naming who they want as their partners and naming what students they want involved. It all plays out very, very interesting. The last kind of demographic topic I wanted to explore with you guys was around social class and socioeconomic status. And from the same study we were talking about earlier, they didn't find much in regard to this demographic, but unsurprisingly, they did find that upper-class students were more likely to assist faculty for course credit, while lower-class students were more likely to do it for pay, which makes sense. And I can actually start off this topic, because I've had discussions with my professors about it, and we think, typically, RAs, they don't usually work that many hours, and sometimes the pay isn't all that great. So we imagine that's probably not very appealing to low-income students. They're going to want to find work that has more hours and better pay, and that fits with the crazy schedule of just being an undergrad student with courses and other projects. So I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that, and if you think that's a barrier for getting welcomed into these types of spaces, and is this type of work not appealing for all types of students?
Yeah, I think it would definitely be a barrier, because then if they know that they're not going to get paid enough, or they know that it's not a sustainable job, then people, like, they might not even apply for it in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a huge barrier. Even, like, with the Changemaker Studio, like, we, like, the hourly rate that we get paid is, like, quite good for, like, a university student, but then you only work, like, 3 hours a week.
Yes.
Right. So it's not, it's like the pay is fine, but then the hours are low. So in reality, you're not really getting that much. So yeah, I think pay is a huge barrier, especially when you're like in undergrad and you might not be living in your parents' home anymore. So you might just have like another job instead of research, and then you don't get to build those relationships like Nicole said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Zane. Thanks for sharing that.
In my opinion, I feel like for the people who are motivated for external reasons, they would be more likely to just do the work so that they know that when they're going to get into higher education, that they would be more willing to get paid less or like essentially nothing. In my situation, I knew that the hours were going to be limited, so it's not my only job. So I feel like for some people who maybe are working full time in order to support themselves may overlook it because of the pay. But I think for people who have like external motivators, they'd be more than willing to set aside those 3 hours a week to get paid less, but they know that the outcome would be better.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point.
But then I guess it's a bit of a privilege to be able to act on those external motivators, right?
Absolutely.
If there are financial barriers, then being in research, despite it being something that you need to do to advance yourself and your career, you're unable to participate. And I really think about the process that I've gone through extensively has been the medical school application process. And I'm happy to report that I was accepted. I'm going to the University of Alberta next year.
Oh, wow.
But let me tell you, they're starting to look at the sort of equitable process. And I'll tell you confidently, it's far from that at the moment. So it takes thousands and thousands of dollars to apply to medical school. Even just the feature of having an undergraduate degree is a gatekeeper in itself. And then I really think higher education is also being really valued. I think it's getting close to the point where a master's degree might even start to be where they start to look at you. I think that we've talked about these external motivators. Well, and Nicole described earlier about research being something that's part of what they consider to be an important part of being a medical expert. So you're having to say no to a lot of money-making opportunities, right? You're having to say no to the benefits of potential, opportunity revenue in order to try for something that is ridiculously competitive, where just your sort of generic odds of getting in are astronomical this year, especially both accurately and succinctly, ridiculous. And I think there's a lot of privilege to be able to find yourself on the other side of that process being successful.
Yeah, That's such an excellent point, Daniel. I'm glad you brought up the point of privilege, because I've had conversations about that with my research team. And it really is. It's a privilege to take on a research assistant role or leadership role or student change maker role for low hours and okay-ish pay, because if you're able to do that, that's great. But a lot of students financially, that doesn't make sense. For those who do take on those roles, they definitely benefit from having this amazing experience on their resume, even though it might have not, obviously it's probably not your main source of income. That's a total privilege. And I agree. I think that is a barrier for students who can't do that, who can't make a 3-hour-a-week role work, even though it would be amazing on their resume and it would be amazing for advancing themselves in higher education. So that's a very interesting point.
I think it's a privilege to even consider education after an undergrad. I think realistically, a lot of students don't have that opportunity and they go into a professional degree to get a job that's well paying and that can sustain them. And so for students that are considering a master's or a med school application or things like that, that in and of itself is a privilege, because you need to have all these external things beside your resume to do that, as well as be getting A's in all your classes while trying to financially provide for yourself and potentially your family. And I think for a lot of students, that's completely impossible. Like in my degree, I had a lot of moms with 3 kids working full time while trying to do full time nursing to have a job that can provide for their family. And for them, the thought of doing research or leadership or anything like that, they were like, I just need to get through this degree so I can work. Mm-hmm. And so I think especially in professional degrees, the opportunity to consider a master's or education further than your undergrad is a privilege in and of itself.
The thing that I was going to say is that my research, just like the role of being a researcher, has also led me to get job positions that people have applied having masters, and I've gotten the job not even completing my undergrad because I say that I've had research experience. There was someone who doesn't have their undergrad going against 500 other applicants, and me having the opportunity to be accepted for this job. It's interesting because I was never assuming that to come out of this. I just thought, oh, maybe it could help me if I go back to school. It was never a thought that crossed my mind of, oh, I did research, this could help me get this job. So I think that that's the other side of it as well, is the professional side. Is I feel like it, a lot of students potentially aren't even thinking about that side of it, rather just the post-secondary or higher education. So
wonderful. Thanks for all of your reflections and contributions, everyone. We've had a wonderful discussion so far, and I think it's about time to wrap it up. So I just wanted to just pose a final question to all of you, just for last comments. How do you think all of this can improve, and what are some solutions, and whose responsibility do you think it is for inclusion in research or change maker positions in universities for students?
I don't know if this is a possibility, but maybe having research opportunities that are part of the coursework, so that you don't have to deviate from your coursework to do research, but you still have that experience to apply to grad school with. So we had a class on research, and that was that was a really good opportunity. And I was looking at the Master's of Social Work degree, and you need that research class. So if they didn't offer that, then I probably would not have taken that. So maybe just having those opportunities within the course, and maybe giving credit for them. That way, even students who don't want to take an extra job, understandably, can still have that experience.
Yeah.
Yep. And definitely just also grants and paid opportunities for research. I feel like there's a lot of other programs that have these internships that are paid throughout the summer when we have other degrees that are kind of just they're doing the same amount of work, sometimes even more, but are just not being able to have that they just don't have paid opportunities, and so people tend to deviate from, like, try not to do them. Like for me personally, I was like, yeah, let's do the change makers position over I was looking at research roles as well, but I was like, I need to pay off my student loans. Like, I can't afford to take the whole summer and just do research, or even during school. I'm like, I have to work, I have to do my classes. So definitely more paid opportunities with grants going to different things. They could definitely go towards research roles.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Zane and Aruba.
I could go next. I think it's a large system, and it's tough to suggest, just based on our conversation today, it's tough to suggest things without looking at it really, really robustly and clearly to say, mm-hmm. okay, what are our actual potential points that we can pivot? And you know, where's the pressure building? And so I'm reluctant to suggest some things, but mm-hmm. I do think there's a couple of ideas that could be explored within undergraduate mm-hmm. research, and then be reflected upon to see, okay, is this actually working? Is this creating more harm than it is good? One thing I think about is, and it's a process that I went through with the Catamount Fellowship, but not in any of the course-based or paid research assistant positions, which is sort of a standardization of application, right? So you standardize the application process, and this allows people, as much as I benefited from the who you know type interaction and just networking, I have a lot of privilege in I think the way in my ability to participate in that other people may not have. So I think standardizing that sort of application process, as I mentioned earlier, I think collecting data on who's participating, who are the stakeholders, and we're simply not collecting any sort of demographic data right now. So it makes it really hard to evaluate how inclusive mm-hmm. our research programs are. I think mm-hmm. training principal investigators on principles of equity, diversity, inclusion would be an important step. And I don't think it's too outlandish to suggest that would be a good step. Mm-hmm. And then something we've talked about definitely that is exclusion that is exclusionary is sort of the concept that I think we have to build more value as a society in the process of doing research. It's kind mm-hmm. of unbelievable that you're being trained over 4 years in and you know you're making less than $20 an hour. It's kind of unbelievable. Like with a specialized education in cell molecular biology, my major, you know, the jobs I'm being offered by the university to work for them are about $16 an hour less than I was making before I went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then plus 4 years. So the earning potential, it's just to be involved in research, it's not attractive. And we mm-hmm. really have to think, well, what does that mean for young people, for inspiring people to get into research, to the, what does accreditation actually give you? What is specialized training actually giving you? And I think we really have to reflect on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Those are great points, Daniel. Thank you.
I agree with Daniel about standardizing, like, the application process. But I also think bringing like awareness to the students, because I feel like nobody in my year even realized that this was an opportunity that we had. A lot of people, I feel like, just don't, they find out their last week of school. And at that point, there's not a whole lot you can do. It's kind of something that you find on your own. Or in my case, I knew Michaela was in this. So that was how I was able to insert myself into a situation like this. But I also feel like an issue that could be for standardizing it is I definitely do not have the highest GPA, but I feel like my willingness is a lot higher than some people's who might have a GPA. So I feel like no matter what you do, I feel like somebody who has a high GPA could do just as good as work as someone who might not. So I feel like that would be the next roadblock that we would like encounter, would be like whether you do like a personality interview as well as like look at GPAs or something. I don't know. That could be a whole other conversation. But I think that that would be also an issue, would be like drawing a line between that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Corey.
I honestly don't feel like I have much to add besides what Daniel said. I think like that was a really well-rounded solution or suggestion to potential solutions for the problem. I think standardization is probably a good way to go about it. And I think that's hard to accept because it's like, would I be given the same opportunities if that was presented to everyone? And I think that can be hard when you feel like, oh, I did all this networking and like I got this opportunity and I worked really hard for it, but would I be given the same opportunity if I didn't have this privilege and things were set up differently? And I think that can be hard for people to accept sometimes, but I think that's probably the biggest change that would need to happen. And I agree, like education to professors surrounding like diversity, inclusion, and how we can kind of encourage students to participate in research. Because I know like in my program, it was like a dreaded class. Everyone hates research. People chose Mount Royal Nursing because it had less research than U of C. Like it's, especially in my degree, no one wants to do research because they don't find it appealing. And so I think maybe having more education surrounding like how research can be appealing and not just in the ways that it can benefit your resume, but in ways that it can actually help give you like networking opportunities with your profs and help develop a sense of community and those positive attributes that we talked about earlier. And again, looking at the whole system, but it'll take a lot and it'll be a gradual process.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Nicole. And thank you so much for everyone for joining me in this discussion today. I think we had a wonderful exploration and discussion of inclusion with research and change making in the undergraduate world. So thank you very much.